The Red Eye Radio Podcast is a service of Freightliner and Detroit.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Thanks so much for being here this morning. How's everybody doing?
Just great.
Anything going on this weekend?
I don't know. First weekend of March. Welcome to March, everybody.
Wow. Yeah. Wow.
Mm-hmm.
We're to March already.
It's madness.
Yeah, March Madness will start pretty soon. What's the president's bracketology? Did the president do the brackets yet? We need to know. The former president, we know, will be doing the brackets. Brackets are of the utmost importance. Let's get to the bracketology.
Yeah. No, thanks. I think the teams that score the most points during their games are going to win.
I do love this time of the year, though. I do love college basketball this time of the year.
Yeah,
I've watched it more this year because I actually have a team finally for the first time in 50 years. That's good. Seriously, 50 years.
Mm-hmm.
I was a kid the last time I rooted for a college basketball team. I mean, really, that had a shot. And for people in Detroit, you remember that would have been Bob Lanier's St. Bonaventure. So, and down in Houston, Calvin Murphy's Niagara. And Calvin Murphy, who played for Houston for the longest time.
All right.
So, but since then, I mean, that was 69-70. That's 50 years. I finally have a team.
Yeah.
I've always enjoyed it anyway. I love how anybody in the top, what is it now, 68 teams do they have? I mean, now that it's not 64, it's 66 or 68, whatever they allow in, because now they have the pre-tournament, whatever.
Right, yeah.
You know, there are 353 college basketball teams in Division I. Basketball, 353. Mm. So, you know, whether it's the NFL 32 teams or the NHL somewhere around there, the NBA, you know.
Right.
But they're all around 30. 353. So, but it's always interesting to see. It'll be interesting to see what happens.
I like the energy in college basketball. It's almost a throwback to the energy that there used to be in the NBA. I'm not saying there's no energy in the NBA. I'm just saying it's different.
Yeah, it's basketball. Yeah. I've been to a couple games, college basketball games this year. It's not the sideshow that you see at the NBA.
Right.
The announcers are too loud. They're screaming at you. The video's all over the place. As you've seen in the minor league basketball, for example, they'll play music when the game's going on.
Mm. Yeah,
and
yeah.
Even occasionally the NBA games, they'll have a beat to start off. You know, like they take the ball, the bounce, ba boom, ba boom. Like, let me watch the game in peace.
Mm-hmm.
But the NBA seems to think that people don't care about basketball as much anymore, so that's fine. I like college basketball because it's basketball. They have the cheerleaders, they got the bands and everything else, but then when it's time to play the game, they play the game. There's nothing else to taste. They don't sit there and think, oh, okay, we only have a basketball game, and that's not enough to keep your attention, so let's have some guy screaming at you to cheer.
Mm-hmm.
Like, shut up. And now everybody's got the DJs. Now in the NHL, I've been hearing some of the complaints. They have the DJs now, and it's driving people nuts.
Yeah, I with basketball, I like to hear the sound of the game.
So do I. Yeah. So I like college basketball, and I like the fact that you can have a chance at a huge upset.
Yeah.
There's no other sport really you can get at the end of the year some team that, it's like watching Hoosiers is what it is. It's like watching Hoosiers every year, and you're hoping that one of the little guys can knock off one of the big guys until your team becomes one of the big guys.
And two different dynamics in that, you know, in watching some of those seniors play, you're thinking, oh, you know, this person or that person could go on to the NBA.
Yes.
And then you're thinking the other ones, you know, and the other ones aren't going to. But this is going to be a highlight of their life at a very young age. They're incredibly talented and, you know, they're right now on the big stage. And then they'll go into another career field possibly, right?
Yeah.
And that's always fascinating to consider. That they're at this age and they're gonna, you know, and then at some point when they're around our age, they're gonna have the pictures of the team. They're gonna have the, no doubt, a DVR, maybe a thumb drive or something will, you know, have a copy of the game on it, right? Where they can go back and they can watch their kids and their grandkids can go back and watch the game. That to me is fascinating. The rock star in the making kind of scenario, right? This professional athlete, possibly one day, or not. And they're going to be a great college athlete and then go on to something else.
You know, it's funny because I was telling you and I was talking to a couple of people I know that actually run the it's a restaurant called Buffalo Brothers right across from TCU. Mm-hmm. And they're a TCU bar, but also a Buffalo bar.
Right.
Buffalo food bar, and they have the Bills they play and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And there was somebody had in their brackets a couple of weeks ago the TCU would play Buffalo in the second round. And I went, you're going to have a party there? This is the manager of the place. And
yeah.
He's just like, he goes, I don't know. I'd be torn. I don't know who to root for. But for me personally, my love of basketball has been brought back this year for the first time in a long, 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 long time. Really, probably since the Larry Bird, Michael Jordan, I got mind blank. The L.A. Lakers at the Magic Johnson, mm-hmm. Even when Kareem played, you know, with them. I mean, that's really I sort of lost interest. I did love the Boston Celtics team a couple of years ago. They seemed to play a lot of team ball. I still don't like the ball they play in the NBA. I just don't like it. The team I root for right now has no great players. Are rated 21st in the nation. I think in the up to number 15 in the net rankings, which is what they pay attention to when they seed you for it, which is really good. I mean, they're rating them the 16th team in the country. RPI has them as number 9. They have no great players. They've got very good players, but they play defense like you can't believe. That's my type of basketball. That's me. I mean, that's what I grew up on. Those were the teams that I played on, which is you had to have a great shot. You weren't tremendously, you didn't have tremendous athletic ability, but you were able to win a ton of games because you really, really, really played team ball, mm-hmm. and you played defense. You were more concerned with defense than you were scoring.
Yeah.
And in the NBA, that's not the case. So for me, that's why, and people can like sport or music, whatever. I always talk about these things are dumb to debate. They're dumb to debate because people have their personal preferences.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people sit there, well, the NBA's, but you think so. I can't, you, to argue it would be ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, you know, talk about the sound of the game, I mean, I want to hear
the
shoes squeaking on the floor. I want to be able to hear the net, you know, when the ball goes in. I want to hear that swoosh.
When I was a kid, we went to NBA games and you could hear that. I mean, I saw Kareem,
yeah.
I saw Pete Maravich play, and it was just, you know, and the tickets weren't so, you know, incredibly expensive. I saw him play. You could hear them talking on the court. I sat behind the Boston Celtics one time. We got $12 tickets. We were in high school, and the Boston mm-hmm. Celtics were in town. And Tommy Heinsohn, and you could smoke back then. And Heinsohn mm-hmm. is smoking on the bench, whatever. Mm-hmm. And a guy behind us, and this is the John Havlicek days, the Paul Silas days. What was the former Don Nelson? It's funny, one time I had a date, and Don Nelson was coach of the Mavericks. I'm at a game, and the woman with me, and she said, where did Don Nelson come from? And I said, well, I saw him as a player. And she turned to me, and she said, how the hell old are you?
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
No, because
yeah, well, I mean, it's because
But at that point, somebody behind me yelled, you're a bum, you're a bum. He called a timeout and turned around and stared right at us. And we looked around, the guy behind us who was screaming all these profanities mm-hmm. at him ducked behind us. Mm-hmm. And we're looking, going, no, right here. But he actually called a timeout because he was being heckled. and, you know, Havlicek and all these guys come back. I mean, those are the kind of things, and it wasn't, the music wasn't blaring over everything. You could hear the players trash-talking back and forth. That's what I want. I don't want the sideshow in sports. I know people will say, well, you're old. Well, fine, I like the sport. I like music. I don't want, if I'm at a rock show, I don't want a basketball game to break out.
Well, but, I mean, if you think about, like, golf, right, there is consideration for the player because it is a mental game just as much as a physical game.
Mm-hmm.
There is great strategy, which brings the mind and your physical ability and all of that and your coordination together, right? So the consideration is that when they're calling the match, they will talk like this.
Yes.
The same thing with tennis. Can you imagine if they brought in and, you know, and then all of a sudden, you know, Serena Williams is about to serve and then you hear Welcome to the Jungle start on a loudspeaker, Guns N' Roses blasting.
Screaming, come on, Serena!
Right, right. And I know it's not, it is a mental game for those players, but for the fans, that's part of it too. That's part of it. I mean, yeah, you're going to applaud, you're going to do, but you're wanting to hear the sounds of the game.
Oh, you know, and also just since we're talking these kind of irritations, you know, it just drives me nuts.
Hmm.
The train horn at football games.
Yeah. Right.
It's just so loud. It's just like, no, it's almost as if, look, we know you fans are, you people are, the only people that come to these games are people that are absolutely rich who really don't care about it because they can afford a 900 square foot TV at home, and they're here just for the social aspect of it, so they're not going to be cheering. So we need to pump in all of this artificial sound to pretend that people actually care about the game.
Yeah. Yeah. And for me, that's not it. I know there's a difference between all of those sports, but I think I'm not alone in appreciating the sound of the game. Appreciating what's going on. And you get that even though they do have the organ and everything in baseball and they do, you know, all that stuff.
Well,
you
know, they still had the organ back then, but it was more, I mean, I loved it when the crowd used to be the one that used to set the pace of it. They would come. Now the organ would go, you know, once in a while.
Right.
But, you know, way back then it was the crowd knew when to go. When they started yelling defense and you had 18,000 people at an NBA game, you know, chanting defense, defense, because the game was tight, that was led by the crowd.
Mm-hmm.
That all came from the crowd. There was nobody, there was no signs, there was no LED scoreboards. Mm-hmm. The excitement came, it didn't come from the top down. It came from the bottom up, which I believe in sports it should. And, mm-hmm. and the energy that was in those in those arenas and in those stadiums, just I don't think matches today because of all the, I don't want to call it commercialization because it's not all just commercialization.
Right.
It's the sideshow or the belief that people are too stupid or just too apathetic to cheer for their own team. And so we need to pump all this artificial crap into there all the time.
Right.
And it just drives me nuts. I've stopped going because of that.
Yeah. Yeah.
I really have. I was like, I don't want to be screamed at every minute. I want to just watch.
And if you think about a basketball court, I mean, it's more intimate, clearly, than a huge football field, to the extent that you even have courtside seats. I mean, you're right there, and that's an experience. But when it's really overwhelming, and you're not, to me, that's distracting. Then I don't want that experience.
The lower you go, the less sound you hear because the speakers were up higher on top of the most scoreboards.
Yes. Right.
And so it's the people that are 10 rows, 15 rows up.
Where I would
get gray seats. But when you're because the sound doesn't come straight down like that, you can actually hear it if you're really up close. But if you're 15 rows out, you get blown out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's just like, why? Why am I paying this kind of money to get drowned out by the sound system and the DJ and the announcer screaming at me?
Yeah, it's distracting.
Yeah. All right. That's enough.
Two old guys talking about distractions.
The old days. I know. I know. But whatever. But it's
good.
March's going to be a good month, though. And then I guess it's April, so when they have the Final Four, though, early April. But still, the madness starts. I think it'll be after next week. Because I think most of the teams finish their regular season after next week. So then it'll be the tournaments, and then boom. Coming up, though, a couple of things here on some analysis, an op-ed piece that was written by a Clinton advisor on the Michael Cohen testimony. That more coming up, plus your calls and comments. It's a Friday show, 866-90-RED-EYE.
You may not be able to predict blizzards and ice storms, but you can prepare your truck to handle them. Make sure your truck is prepared for any last-minute winter storms by keeping tabs on your tires before each trip. Proper tire traction is essential year-round, but especially during winter when the roads are slick and roadway behavior is unpredictable. Protect your tire investment with routine checks and pre-trip inspections all winter long. Check pressure levels, tread depth, and inspect for any visible damage or debris stuck in wheel components. Look for steam or melted snow coming off wheel hubs, as this could indicate your wheel bearings are overheating. If necessary, give your tires a warm wash before inspecting them, as snow can cover potential warning signs of damage. If you need any tire assistance, stop into a TA truck service near you and speak to one of our TA certified tire experts.
This maintenance tip is a service of TA Truck Service Road Squad. If you break down, we show up. Call 800-924-SHOP.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Carly, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90. Red Eye, coming up following the bottom of the hour, I want to read portions of a former Clinton aide, advisor. Former Bill Clinton advisor analyzing the Cohen hearings.
All right.
And it's really pretty good.
You know, it was interesting. Some of the analysis that came out yesterday actually was interesting to look at. When we were talking Wednesday night, Thursday morning about it yesterday on the show, we both mentioned that we had both noticed separately that there wasn't that big gotcha moment that there seemed to be on other stories with the liberal media, especially with anything regarding Trump. You would think after that testimony, this was going to be that gotcha moment. Oh, my gosh, here it goes. Here's where he's going to, or this is what's going to bring down the president. From what we learned today, this will bring the president down. And there was none of that. There was none of that. There may have been a few, but it wasn't this huge collective energy that there has been in the past on other items. When I was going about my day throughout the day yesterday, I had the media on in the background, whether it was radio or TV, but especially with television, nothing there either. Just and some interesting analysis online, about the items that clearly stood out to a lot of people, even the liberals, in talking about when he said Cohen saying, I never wanted to work in the White House. And you mentioned this on yesterday's show. Oh. But others were on it. Even liberal commentators were on that going, yeah, everybody knows that he was.
Yeah, I mean, the Twitter just... Well, by the way, I mean, they're actually... That's part of the criminal referral, apparently, from Jordan and Meadows.
Yes.
Saying, that's an absolute lie, and everybody knows it. You can find witnesses all over the place that he lied about that.
Right. Because that goes, that goes to motive. As to why you would do something, as to why... you would do what you're doing there in that moment, in that testimony on that day. And then, of course, the banking issue and, denying that there was bank fraud. It's like, wait a minute. That's another item that Mark Meadows took issue with and I think is part of that criminal referral. But it is, it was an interesting day and it seemed the whole thing fell flat. Of course, we knew it was going to fall flat because he's a convicted liar.
They've got the goods. Eric Harley and Gary McNamara on Red Eye Radio.
And he's Eric Harley. I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. You know, as we talk about the president walking away from, you know, the North Korea summit, and as we said yesterday, it's, you know, it's the right thing to do if you can't get a deal. Wall Street Journal broke down yesterday what part of the deal that, you know, why, you know, what specifically it was. And as they said, based on the details that have emerged, Mr. Kim came to Hanoi with the familiar North Korean offer. He would dismantle all or parts of the Yongbyon nuclear complex in return for lifting economic sanctions. Afterwards, Mr. Trump said the North Koreans wanted all sanctions lifted, and hours later, the North's foreign minister insisted that they did not ask to lift all sanctions. What he said next was more relevant. The North's proposal, he said, was the biggest denuclearization measure we could take at the present stage in relation to the current level of confidence between North Korea and the United States. And then they write, that's why Trump walked away. Dismantling one nuclear complex in return for lifting major sanctions would have left the bulk of North Korea's arsenal and bomb-making facilities unaddressed. The end of sanctions would have restarted revenue flow into North Korea that it could use to improve the bomb and missile delivery technology it already possesses. The incentive for the North to give up its weapons would have vanished, which is to say the summit produced useful information about North Korea's real intentions. It's what you and I said all along.
Yes.
The reason you go into this is not that you necessarily believe you're going to get him to agree to denuclearize, but you want to get him to a particular point where you know what the United States is dealing with and what we have to do from that point on.
Yes. And by the way, to also expose to the world his arsenal. Now,
yes,
many
yes.
leaders know, but it is not common knowledge. But when you bring this summit to the stage, to the world stage, that has an effect of educating people as to how serious North Korea is as a threat.
He said the question is what to do next. Mr. Trump said we'll get there and the talks will continue at lower levels. Perhaps a continuing maximum pressure campaign that includes sanctions will cause Mr. Kim to reconsider his lost opportunity to enter the 21st century. Meanwhile, the U.S. needs to prepare if Mr. Kim refuses. One concern is that Mr. Trump, in his post-news summit conference, seemed to take off the table military exercises with South Korea. Mr. Trump went on at length to talk about how expensive these military preparedness drills are. We don't get reimbursed, and so on. Nuclear proliferation, whether from North Korea, Iran, or others in the Middle East, or indeed the volatile Pakistan, remains the greatest threat the world and the U.S. faces. Having the means to resist it is worth at least $100 million spent on the Korean Peninsula. I didn't say it last night, but I agree with that statement completely. To make that now, I don't know if Trump really believes that or he's just trying to set the stage, because there's a couple of things here. First off, you know, for his comments on Kim Jong-un not being involved, he believes what he said about Otto Warmbier. Mm-hmm. And all that was, you and I looked at each other, and he kept going and going, and this is during the speech, and you looked at me and you said, he needs to shut up.
Yeah, stop talking about that.
Yeah, he needs to move on. It was horrible that he wasn't prepared for that question, because you don't go into those kind of specific details. What you simply say is, we've had those discussions.
Yes.
We've issued
our concern.
Yeah, we've issued our concerns way before then, and what I said to him will remain private. And you move on from that question, because you can't win that one. The liberal media pounded him today. Mm-hmm. Everybody knew that was a major mistake by the president, but it was his words. Look, he's got Mike Pompeo standing right next to him. Trump knows exactly what the regime of North Korea is like, and I believe he knows exactly what Kim Jong-un is like. I think both sides are trying to play, when they get together, nice with each other.
Yeah.
And I know that Trump probably believes, I believe Trump believes, as we believe, doesn't matter whether Kim Jong-un specifically knew exactly what was going on in that case, it's still his fault. He's created that brutal regime. Mm-hmm. So it ends there. But you don't get into those discussions, because at that point, it does make you look weak. But what doesn't make him weak is the fact that he walked away. He didn't do a horrendously bad deal like Obama did with Iran.
Right.
where Obama made it easier for the world's largest exporter of terrorism,
yeah,
where he refunded them with the assets taken from, remember the money taken that we froze from the hostage crisis, mm-hmm, a long, 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 long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
But he, in essence, refunded the biggest terrorist country exporter of terrorism in the world. And so I have no problem. Trump walked away because it would have been a bad deal, and now they know closer to where they stand. And as they write here, Mr. Trump's willingness to walk is consistent with his posture towards Iran, and perhaps it will help his negotiations with China on trade. No doubt he was tempted to accept a deal that he could call a victory while running for re-election, but a continuing nuclear capability in the North would have made that victory as hollow as Barack Obama's deal with Iran. The difference is Trump walked away. And I agree with that. When I saw that, I went, okay, good. Somebody else gets it, because we said it all along. Look, this isn't about just getting a deal. It's what a president has to go through. You have to go through the process of saying, okay, what's the situation? Where are they going? Let's analyze them. Let's analyze the leader up and down. Let's find out how they're going to go. And then we've got to come up with plan B. If we don't get this, let's keep the sanctions going. Let's build support worldwide. Let's be public about what we want and what they want. Let's then talk to world leaders. Let's get people. Let's build alliances by our side. It's exactly what you're supposed to be doing.
Yeah. We said last night we were getting word from Bob Costantini, who works for our company. He was tweeting from there, from Hanoi, and basically letting everyone know, his followers, and that included us, that things were not going as planned, and they weren't sure if the lunch was even happening, and that the press conference was being moved up by a couple of hours. And I said, that's a Trump move. Ending this thing early is a Trump move. Because that's what, when you believe that there's nothing to talk about, well, okay, case in point, the meeting with Pelosi, where he says, hey, can we, what do you think about getting a deal on the wall? She says, no. Okay, meeting's over.
Right.
That's a Trump move, because the greatest leverage you can have in any situation is the ability, and in any negotiation, is the ability to walk away. And we have all the leverage there. We're the ones putting pressure on Kim Jong-un. And so when they come in and demand, no, we want all of the major sanctions lifted, and we're only going to denuke this one facility. The answer is no all day long.
And also, we need to make sure we mention this, because you and I had mentioned the NBC story. Hmm. And the NBC story that said, remember that they've already taken off the table that North Korea has to fully denuclearize.
Hmm.
And we just said, well, if they did that, if this story is true, and knowing it was NBC, we said that if this story is true, well, then it's hopeless.
Right.
Then Trump's walking down the wrong. It wasn't true.
Right. Right. That's not the way it went down.
No, not the way it went down at all. It wasn't true. They want everything accounted for. From what we know now, they want everything. It's not like, okay, you can dismantle a couple of sites and keep it going, which has been the policy over the last 30 years.
Look, if they get to the point, we don't believe that he's going to do away with all of his nukes. We don't believe that. But if they get to the point, even getting close to having an agreed upon inventory of his arsenal, that will tell the world where he stands and how powerful he is. And that's, that in and of itself is a great benefit.
And then you work through other ways what to do to help to destabilize the regime, probably.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
If we're going to be blunt about what we'll be doing, mm-hmm, behind the scenes, once you know you can't get it done, once you know he won't negotiate, what would somebody like Trump and other world leaders wish to do? Destabilize that regime and do whatever they could internally to promote a coup.
Yes. Because at some point, with this kind of pressure, these kind of sanctions, something has to get.
Well, that's your whole point. At this point, We need to tighten sanctions even more. We need to get China.
Yes.
You know, we need to get China on our side because China, you know, I don't, and I will agree with Trump. I don't really believe China is comfortable with somebody like Kim Jong-un there. Not that they would mind a communist nation of some sort, you know, being there. But I don't think they can, they look at a Kim Jong-un, they can't, I'm sure they've done their own psychological makeup on him.
Right. Their greatest
and look at him and say, this guy is, could be a whack job.
Yeah, I think their greatest concern is some kind of refugee crisis. But if the if it goes down right, and there is control and there is direct and immediate aid to the people of North Korea, then they could possibly control any kind of refugee.
If there's anybody who can make it clear, even though communications at times has been his biggest problem and it's self-inflicted, but he has the great opportunity here. The president does. With somebody like Pompeo, because Pompeo, I mean, Pompeo gets up there. He's just great. Mm-hmm. You look at him, you go, oh, that guy's credible. Right. And that's what you need on the world stage, because that was the world stage. And people say, well, he shouldn't go over there and meet with them. Yeah, I can understand that, but he had the world stage, and he told the world stage, it slowly came out, North Korea really doesn't want to get rid of their nuclear weapons. That's really what came out. It's not that Trump failed, it's that they don't really want to wish to get rid of it. After a year, they really don't want to do what the world wishes them to do.
Right. It's great positioning.
It is.
Because we said all along there, you fully go through the entire diplomatic process to the full extent so that you know and the world knows that if there is any kind of attack from North Korea, that a preemptive move by the United States is not out of line. You have gone through every measure diplomatically. The world now knows what he has. And we said this when they were before the summit last year, that you come away with, okay, folks, we all know where he is, where he stands. If he lobs one, or if we believe it's inevitable, a preemptive strike is definitely on the table, and it is justified and supported by the world.
Oh, and you and I talked, I believe, in our pre-show meeting about this. This hurts him because he didn't get a deal. No, it doesn't.
No, not at all.
Doesn't hurt him with his base. No. It doesn't. What he's for Trump to walk away and say, here's the whole point. I'm a deal maker. It was a crappy deal.
Right.
Deal makers say that all the time.
Walking away is part of it.
Right. And that's what they were promoting. No. The deal's not there. You walk away. We walked away from a deal that would be bad for us, bad for South Korea, and bad for the world. And then you start telling why over the next couple of days, because the international community is all paying attention to it. I think now it's a good move that Trump did this, because the international community, you heard all the questions they had. They didn't care about Cohen. They cared about North Korea and what's going on and why you didn't sign the deal. That's what the international community wants. Everything, as we have talked about before, is about marketing and communicating a message consistently. Coherently and consistently, and on Korea, I believe he's doing it.
By the way, when he walked away during that meeting, that very quick meeting from Nancy on the wall, you had the editorial board of the Washington Post saying, "Nancy, go to the table."
Yeah,
that's not a loss for Trump. That's a positive. Yeah. And by the way, she said, "Not a dime." He got more than a dime. He got three dimes. He didn't get what he wanted. He didn't get what ultimately he wanted, but he got more than she was saying.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Now, this is interesting here. I just was just scanning the news. Cuomo appeals to Jeff Bezos to bring Amazon back to New York City. It may be proof that Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez isn't the darling of all Democrats in New York. Cuomo has reportedly penned a full-page letter to the Amazon founder as he clings to hope that he can win back the tech giant and lure it to New York. were recently scrapped plans to build a second headquarters campus, a report said Thursday. That's the one thing, I think it was Peggy Noonan who wrote it in the Wall Street Journal. She said, New York's dead for the next decade. Who's going to want to go there?
Yeah, right.
And you see, there's a group now in Northern Virginia trying to do the same thing.
Well, and that's the thing, is that imagine that the governor could convince Amazon to change their mind and then go through with the HQ2 project. Others are still going to look at that and go, nope, I'm not. Why would I want to have that kind of headache?
Yes.
Right. Because what you're doing in that debate is you're creating enemies of your brand. Right? Because there are going to be people that believe you're evil because one side says you are. So you're creating customers who may not want to be customers anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't want to be a part of that, ever.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. It's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley and I'm Gary McNamara. Thanks so much for being here this morning. How are you?
I'm all right. I could use a nap. Oh, you're not talking to me. Never
mind. Now, in the news today, Biden said Trump did the right thing by walking away from the North Korea deal. Biden then said that Mike Pence is a decent guy and then had to retract it by the end of the day because you can't compliment both men in the period of 24 hours and possibly have a chance of winning the Democrat nomination for president of the United States in 2020.
Yeah, he's out. It's over.
Other good to fair news, 2.6% growth in the fourth quarter last year. And that makes a 2.9% for the year, which is in essence 3%, which is about a third higher than the average of the Obama administration during their 8 years, which is good. And they should promote that. Also, it seems that this week, the other big news, which seemed to get lost in the Cohen hearings and the North Korea summit. And that is that it seems as if our trade representatives have come, the United States and China have come to a deal on an enforcement mechanism for the trade deal, which is huge. That's everything.
Yeah.
If you come up with the enforcement mechanism, it means you don't have to go to the World Trade Organization. Or the enforcement mechanism includes a World Trade Organization in some way. Or you've decided that you're going to have your own basically arbitration panel that will make a decision on if there's a question with trade, which is huge. And it looks like I wouldn't be surprised in the next month if they announce a deal. I really wouldn't be surprised at all. I think the president. And the other news is not only the enforcement mechanism, but after they got the enforcement mechanism or around the same time or knowing they were going to get the enforcement mechanism. I don't have the exact timeline on it. We announced that the 25% tariffs on Chinese products is gone permanently. I mean, there is no extension where, okay, there's another deadline. That's gone. And that's all good news. And I do believe that the president and the White House and Larry Kudlow, for example, have informed the president that they are worried because of the tariffs with China, because of some of the things that have happened this week, the report that came out showing bankruptcy for farmers at a 10-year high, the South Dakota governor, a Republican, coming to the president and saying, you are decimating, the tariffs are decimating our economy. I know what you're trying to do, but you've got to resolve this and you've got to do it now. We always said there's a time limit on the tariffs. There's a time limit when the president would have to say, okay, there's pressure. You know, the president said in Vietnam yesterday that there's a ton of pressure because the economy is hurting in China, and it is. And there is pressure there in China, but there's also pressure here in the United States.
Yeah.
And right. That's the one thing he didn't mention, but of course it exists, and that's why we believe
that they are moving forward very quickly and will get something on China. The interesting thing will be what will happen, because you hear nothing, absolutely nothing, on any type of vote for the new NAFTA, the USMCA. You don't hear anything on that, and you don't hear the president threatening that they must pass it, or otherwise that they must pass it, and if they don't pass it and pass it soon, we're going to go back to pre-NAFTA rules and regulations. The president had that threat going on as recently as what, a month and a half ago?
Yeah.
And haven't heard that since. So do they realize that they can't do that? Are they concerned that the 2.6, even though it was promoted as being more than the expected 2.2%, the last thing they wanted was 2.2% in the fourth quarter. And I do believe they look at the 2.6% and they do look at the tariffs. And as you and I have said, if the tariffs are going to have a hit, it'll be the first and second quarter of this year.
Yeah. This is something that you want to get off the table. You want it to start working, the removal of the tariffs to start working for the GDP as soon as possible. But certainly that growth to start building between now and the end of the year. And if already you're looking at the first and second quarter being negatively affected, that means that there's a greater uphill battle to correct the annualized GDP in those third and fourth quarters. And the biggest move that the administration can make is the removal of those tariffs. And it's not just with China and getting a deal done there. They're trying to, they believe they're getting close and they could sign it within a few weeks. They're talking about an economic summit that could happen mid-March. And if they get something done by the end of this first quarter and a deal there, that's going to be a positive. But you also have to deal with the steel and aluminum tariffs that are also hurting manufacturing domestically. That's something that's going to have to be done fairly quickly. And I don't hear anything just yet on any of that. Maybe that's worked out in some way as a part of the China deal. Well, I guess we'll see. I don't know. And I think when you start looking at the idea there, what did I read yesterday? A looming recession. Someone wrote it in those words as if it's inevitable. Oh, it was a report on the GDP when the GDP came out. And I forget what publication I was reading because I read several stories on it. But they said a looming recession. And that is this whole idea that's been thrown around where you have these analysts that are saying that there's going to be a recession likely between sometime between now and the end of next year. I'm not sure that's the case. I don't know what data they're looking at specifically, any given analyst, but certainly you don't want those tariffs in play right now going into the political season. When the president starts on his campaign starts hitting the road, you're going to have some numbers, strong numbers to tout, and you're going to have that support in the Farm Belt. Keep in mind, this is the president, or back then, the candidate that said, you can't be against ethanol mandates and win Iowa. Now, he didn't win Iowa, but ultimately he won the election, and he is for ethanol mandates. Same effect on a much greater level when it comes to tariffs, because you're talking about not just the ethanol growers, you're talking about how many different farmers and growers of all those different products that are hit by the tariffs. That's something, that's a lot of repair work you're going to have to do politically in the Farm Belt. A lot of work to be done there.
It was bizarre world at the CPAC conference going on right now, the Conservative Political Action Conference, when CNN analyst Van Jones credited the conservative movement with galvanizing support for criminal justice reform during yesterday's appearance. Jones discussing the sweeping criminal justice reform package passed in December, which aims to reduce mass incarceration by expanding the pool of inmates eligible to participate in early release programs, among other policy changes. The conservative movement in this country, unfortunately, from my point of view, is now the leader on the issue of reform. If you look at Mississippi, a rock-rib, totally conservative former jailer and now governor, Governor Brian, cut the prison population and crime at the same time. Governor Deal in Georgia cut the prison population and crime at the same time. And what you're seeing now is a Republican governor is being tough on the dollars, tough on crime, and shrinking the prison population. Now, the other thing is, on criminal justice reform, and also the president of the United States, did his name get mentioned? So there you go.
Yeah,
that's where we are.
Yeah,
in other news.
By the way, that's the only likely the only credit that the president's going to get on that from the left.
Probably.
Yeah.
I thought this was really really interesting. Mark Penn. Mm-hmm. Former Clinton pollster advisor, mm-hmm. Bill Clinton. Cohen's best shots at Trump missed their mark. I just want to read a couple of sentences to you here because it's really, really good.
Okay.
After bilking corporations out of millions of dollars for insight into his client, failing to pay his taxes, trying to entrap his client, and pleading guilty to lying to Congress, now disbarred attorney Michael Cohen took his best shots at President Trump, calling him a liar and a cheat. The testimony brought Congress to a new low after years of dead-end investigations of supposed Russia-Trump conspiracies. Yes, Trump was behind payments to women who may have had stories to tell. He and his counselor, Rudy Giuliani, already admitted they reimbursed Cohen for any payments he made. The stories these women had to tell were embarrassing, but they were not about any illegal behavior. It was not a crime to pay for their stories at any time in any way. They were personal, not campaign expenditures. This legal point was litigated in the past with the trial of former Democratic presidential candidate John Edwards, and the FEC has ruled that the Edwards payments, even from donors, were not campaign contributions. His checks that he wrote were not campaign expenditures. The fact that prosecutors in the Southern District of New York pushed Cohen to plead guilty to campaign violations for his payments to Stormy Daniels does not change the fact that it is not a crime at all to make those payments. And we had said that, by the way, at that point. We said he pleaded guilty to something that wasn't a crime. Hillary campaign's team, it should be remembered, did disguise their payments to Fusion GPS for opposition research. And those were without question campaign expenditures for which former British spy turned opposition researcher Christopher Steele was the ultimate disclosed beneficiary. And now let's not forget the hundreds of those serving in Congress over the years paid sexual harassment claims using government funds complete with hush agreements. By the same logic, they would all be guilty of illegal campaign contributions. The rest of Cohen's testimony and many of the questions from the House Oversight Committee members were a farce. Trump didn't want to disclose his grades in college. Think about this now, because this is actually pretty funny when you think about it. Trump didn't want to disclose his grades in college. Cohen uniquely heard Trump say something racist. Trump inflated the value of a picture of himself. Trump must have known about the Trump Tower meeting because he saw someone whisper about something to Trump. Trump, Cohen had to admit under questioning, did not take drugs. Trump, shockingly, does not have a love child. I have never seen questions asked rapid fire about the personal traits of a sitting president designed simply to elicit embarrassing information. Perhaps Congress has a new mission statement I missed. Since it no longer agrees on legislation, it now investigates the personal lives of people, checking whether they have out-of-wedlock kids or paid for abortions. Is this why we elected Democrats to replace gridlock Republicans? At the same time, Cohen stuck to what no doubt he has told prosecutors. He did not have any evidence of collusion with Russia. He did not, as the Steele dossier alleged, go to Prague and act as the go-between for the campaign in exchange for billions of dollars. All Democrats must agree with that now because nobody accused him of lying about that. Remember the ping?
Mm-hmm.
Remember the ping story from about 2 months ago?
Yeah.
So now all Democrats agree that he wasn't in Prague? He had, in fact, gone to had he, in fact, gone to Prague, no doubt he would have taken the offer. Tragically for Cohen, he was investigated in the first place because of the Steele dossier and these false claims of his Prague meeting, but Special Counsel Robert Mueller's scorched earth investigation was never about just verifying the dossier. It was always about fully investigating everyone mentioned in and all of their financial dealings and even their family members. Unfortunately for Cohen, that meant reviewing all of his finances and banking records, and that exercise revealed Cohen was running a racket, selling his supposed insights into Trump, failing to pay taxes, and committing bank fraud as the value of his taxi medallions plummeted. So there you go. I just thought I had to read that because it really puts it into perspective.
No, I think it was so well written that it points out a number of the things that, as we were picking it apart yesterday, it just absolutely fell flat. The entire effort. And what's interesting is you and I during the break were talking about it, and I think you mentioned it earlier on the air, that it was the highest day of ratings at MSNBC.
Yep.
Right. And that makes sense because they built it up to look like or seem like this was going to be the gotcha moment because, you know, the whole leaked testimony thing, opening statement, all of that, and that they believed there was going to be something criminal. I think a lot of them watching believed it was not going to be related to Stormy Daniels or anything like that. It was going to be something bigger, a bigger criminal matter. And for many of them, that's probably collusion.
MSNBC had its, on Wednesday, its highest rated day in the network's history, except for the presidential elections.
Wow. That's huge. And again, because...
The presidential elections of 2008, 2012, and 2016.
Yeah. That's amazing. Because they thought something was going to come of it.
866-90-RED-EYE.
The Eagle has landed.
Putting the first men on the moon required a huge, concentrated national effort, and Agriculture Secretary Sonny Perdue says that bringing high-speed internet access to rural America should be approached the same way, a moonshot approach. Last year, Congress appropriated $600 million toward that, another $600 million this year, but according to Perdue...
It's only the tip of the iceberg.
He told the House Ag Committee this week money appropriated so far will be used to demonstrate best ways to get rural broadband projects done by bringing in outside money and expertise. The actual cost of bringing internet access to every American in rural areas is going to be in the several billions of dollars.
The federal government, frankly, doesn't have enough money to do all this itself. What we're going to try to learn is how to optimize and leverage federal incentives where there's not an economic reason to do this, get people who are in that business that know how to do it and to do the most of it.
So even $1 billion won't be enough.
Not nearly enough.
In Washington, Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
The USDA report is sponsored by Cenex Roadmaster XL Premium Highway Diesel Fuel and Shell Rotella.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
He is Eric Carley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Coming up following the bottom of the hour, Governor Cuomo in New York trying to get Amazon back.
Right.
Trying to get them to come back, to reconsider. We'll have that. Mm. And what should a failing grade be in school?
Zero.
Here's your forecast.
The rains have subsided in portions of California that have witnessed that flooding, but we will see continued streams and riverbanks to their crest as that mountain runoff continues through the day today. The system that delivered the rain in the west is moving eastward, packing snow for the north-central Rockies and moving toward the Plain States throughout the day today. Watch it in the Dakotas for snowfall on I-94 and I-90, making its way to I-29, which runs along the Minnesota and Dakotas border. We'll pick up heavy amounts of snowfall today as well. Most of Texas is dry. The eastern part of the state will pick up showers. Hugging the coastline is a stationary front that'll deliver rain to the south, and the snow line will pick up just north of the Big Stone Gap of Virginia. Some mixed icing and precip throughout the mid-Atlantic states today, with light snow extending to New York City. Your national forecast from Red Eye Radio, I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Thanks so much, John. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Show.
It's Red Eye Radio, 866-90-RED-EYE, our audio cut of the day, which we haven't played yet, but I want to play it here.
Okay.
It's all about the Michael Cohen hearings. This is on CNN. This is the panel on CNN. All right? Remember, CNN. I don't know if it was their highest rated day, but it was MSNBC's. But here we go. All right.
Potential problem that I thought Michael Cohen has is when he was asked if he wanted a job in the White House, and he said no. Our reporting, I know, Pam, you've been told, yeah. I've been told, all of us, by people in and around the process, real time, he very much wanted a job in the White House, yeah. Very much. And I'll just say one other thing that
let me interrupt you for one second to show that that clip that I think a lot of us here raised our eyebrows because we knew it to not be true. Take a listen.
How long did you work in the White House?
I never worked in the White House.
And that's the point, isn't it, Mr. Cohen?
No, sir.
Yes, it is.
No, it's not, sir.
You wanted to work in the White House.
No,
you
sir.
You didn't get brought to the dance.
Sir.
And now?
I was extremely proud to be personal attorney to the President of the United States of America. I did not want to go to the White House. I was offered jobs. I can tell you a story of Mr. Trump reaming out Reince Priebus, because I had not taken a job where Mr. Trump wanted me to, which is working with Don McGahn at the White House General Counsel's office.
And I think the issue there is that one sentence. I did not want to go to the White House. All of our reporting suggests that's not true.
And Jim Jordan and Mark Meadows have put a criminal referral to the Department of Justice, not just with that, but two other lies, one on bank fraud and... And what was the other one? I forgot what the other one was here at the moment.
Everything else he said? The part where he was talking?
No, I hit that. In the six-page letter, Ohio Representative Jim Jordan, North Carolina Representative Mark Meadows, wrote Attorney General William Barr that Cohen committed perjury and knowingly made false statements during his testimony. Cohen said Wednesday in a House Oversight and Reform Committee hearing that he never defrauded any bank while he was funding a hush money payment to porn actress Stormy Daniels in 2016. He claimed that his testimony against President Trump wasn't motivated by revenge for excluding him from top White House jobs, saying he never wanted one. In a pre-hearing disclosure form that Cohen signed, he declared that he had no commercial contracts for money originating with foreign government.
Right.
And he testified Wednesday that an employee of a technology firm created a Women for Cohen Twitter account for him, and that I didn't actually set that up. Jordan and Meadows, both leaders with the conservative House Freedom Caucus, told Barr that all of those statements are lies.
Yeah.
Well, it would be interesting that they brought a convicted criminal who one of the convictions was for lying before lying to Congress.
Yeah.
While testifying to Congress after lying to Congress already, gets charged with lying to Congress a second time, and maybe convicted a second time. If he gets convicted a second time, will Democrats bring him a third time to testify?
Well, certainly they'll believe he's more credible. Hey, come on, he's been convicted twice. Look, certainly he's learned his lesson. You know, that was the tone. Remember, a couple of them said it. Your path to redemption, right?
Yes.
This is a story of redemption. No, it's not. No, it is not. It's a story of a guy who has everything to gain by being there. Book deal, TV deal, refusing to promise to not take them, of course. And of course, any consideration he might get from the Southern District's office for cooperating and, you know, with Congress there.
I do think that part of, you know, part of how quiet it was yesterday about this, and when Pelosi was asked about, you know, impeachment, well, will impeachment or an investigation for impeachment come out of this? And she said, no, I don't want to get into that. And because I think they looked at it and thought he was a horrible witness, and they probably do believe this is a great chance the attorney general could bring charges against him for perjury. It was so obvious. That was the thing. When CNN says, oh, yeah, he lied.
Yeah, right.
That wasn't true. When it happened, Twitter just exploded. And it's everybody knew he was lying. Everybody who knew him, anybody who's ever associated with him, knew he was lying. He wanted a White House job, and he made it absolutely clear.
And so if you look at the effects of the entire, you know, circus, that whole thing on Wednesday, he's caught lying again multiple times. We're not surprised. But beyond that, the whole check thing. He gave the president an out by saying he didn't want Melania to find out, and that'll be the defense.
Yeah.
This was not about the campaign. It was about his marriage, which means everything to him. You can scoff at that, but that's his defense. And then everything else is hearsay. And then, of course, the thing with Roger Stone. Hearsay. Because what do you have in that case? You have your key witness who might possibly be convicted twice of lying to Congress on two different occasions, and you want him to help you take the president down. You're going to use him to help you take the president down. I mean, if you're a prosecutor, if you're anyone who is looking at taking down the president.
Well, and obviously they're trying, you know, the whole thing of, you know, what would be your motivation for doing this besides wanting to come clean? And obviously everybody knows what the motivation would be. Any idiot can figure it out. That's why we can. And that is simply that he has no friends on the right anymore. Hmm. He has now become the hero of the resistance.
Mm-hmm.
What, the GoFundMe account? Liberals now love him.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Well, they love him now, right now. They'll do anything. They'll donate. Look, that's why MSNBC had its highest rated day ever, except for coverage of presidential elections, because there was this hope. This is the guy. This is the guy that can get Trump. Finally, we've got it. We've got it. I mean, they were just so excited. They thought they had it. This was their Super Bowl. I don't know how they think of him today or how they'll think of him, you know, in a week if the Democrats just slowly dismiss him and move on to something else. But the one thing that he wants to do is become the hero of the resistance. Why? That's where he can sell books. That's where he can do speeches in the future. His career in law after he gets out of prison is gone. What is he going to do when he gets out? What's he going to do?
Well, he's going to be a media advisor. He's setting all this up, you know, as the hero for the left. setting all that up to have a very comfortable life, being a professional liar. So,
you know, and it was obvious. You and I picked up immediately on it, the same thing. We played the audio cut yesterday where he said he lost everything because of his blind loyalty to Trump,
mm-hmm.
which was the biggest load of,
yeah,
and
right.
It's Friday. I don't want to lose my job for using profanity on the air, but it was the biggest pile of horse doo-doo ever. No, you did it because you were greedy.
Yeah.
You did it because you wanted money. You did it for the old-fashioned reason. The only reason I'm going to jail is because of my good character traits. Stop it.
Yes.
What a load of.
I'm going to prison for being a good man. Right.
Only in the United States could I'm amazed he didn't say that. Only in the United States could a man of great character like me end up in prison for acting with great character, blind loyalty to a president
yeah.
that I once put my trust in. Stop it!
Yeah, I lied, but I am not a liar. That was one of the, that right there was a moment where I nearly spit water through my nose. I laughed so loud I scared the daylights out of my dog. I mean, it just rendered laughter from a very deep level because it was so absurd. I thought to myself, you know, you can say I lied and it was wrong. You can say I lied and try and make the silly claim that I lied and I'm not lying today. I wanted to set the record straight. You could get that past some people, and you might have. But when you say, I lied, but I am not a liar, and I think it was Mark Meadows that came back later and said, no, that's actually the definition of a liar, is somebody who lies. You lied multiple times. You lied for a living. You're a liar.
I know we live in a society where we become a bunch of gullible tribal but
groups.
Thank you very much. Yes, yeah. Thank you. Whew, got me out of that one, didn't he? You know, I understand that this nation, with so many people, are just completely ignorant, and they're emotional, and they're tribal, and they wish to be BS. But you know what we've lost in all of this? We have lost. Because we've become such a gullible nation, we have lost the sophisticated BSers. You actually used to have to be good to even attempt to convince a very cynical, excuse me,
right,
a very cynical audience. Mm-hmm. And now you can just throw out anything that is obviously BS. Obviously, the first thing, I did it out of blind loyalty. No, you didn't.
No, you didn't.
We've lost that. We've lost the good BSers, the one that could use to go, oh, was he telling the truth or not? I'm not really sure. You watch Cohen yesterday, you're like, stop it, you're lying, it's obvious.
Well, you know, you get that that mean scowl in your eye, and then you point at the people, and you say, I did not have sex with that woman.
Ah, the good old days.
You know?
The good old days.
Yeah.
Well, even though we knew that part was, that was obvious that was.
No, I believed him. I thought he was talking about Hillary, but I believed him.
Yeah.
It begs the old, was this our motto? This was one of the lines that we used for years. They're not even trying.
No,
but,
they're not.
But do you have to?
No,
do you have
don't.
To.
No, you're not.
In a
in,
world
no.
where you can no. create something out of nothing politically on the left.
No.
What you don't need skills.
No,
you don't need skills to lie.
Well, no, in this day and age where I can tell you that if you will not accept that a man is a woman, if the man says he's a woman, and you're a bigot if you don't,
mm-hmm.
well, then you don't have to be a sophisticated BSer anymore.
Right.
You can you believe you can win by intimidation. You can say anything, and I can win because I'm speaking it louder and louder and louder, and I'm getting in your face.
Mm-hmm. Joe Biden Found that out yesterday.
He certainly did, didn't he?
Yeah. Hey, by the way, good luck in 2020, Joe.
866-90-RED-EYE.
How are you treating your truck this winter? Stay prepared by treating your fuel with the proper additives. The most commonly used additives help decrease fuel gelling during colder months, but certain additives can benefit your truck in a number of ways. Cetane boosters can help boost your fuel's cetane rating, which improves the ignition quality of the fuel. This means your fuel will burn faster and result in a smoother and quieter running engine, as well as quicker engine starts. If you're dealing with damage to fuel pumps and injectors, use a detergent additive, which can help dissolve harmful deposits that form on these critical parts of the truck. Whether you're trying to combat fuel gelling or boost your cetane rating, an additive may be just what you need. Stop into a TA truck service near you to shop our selection of cold weather additives today.
This report is a service of Shell Rotella.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. So I still do think that by the time we get after the Sunday morning news shows, because I do believe that on the Sunday morning news shows, they'll be talking about Cohen.
Yeah.
But I bet you afterwards, I bet you come next week, it's almost completely and totally disappeared. Not that they're not going to try to bring up other investigations. They're going to continue on that one. But the talk about Cohen and what he had just disappears on something that was supposed to be that moment. It was going to be the gotcha moment. Yeah. That's what it led up to.
Right.
And again, was it a gotcha moment? No. Did we learn anything?
No.
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 Not really.
In fact, a convicted liar was caught lying again.
It will be interesting to see what Barr does with that, will it not?
Yeah. Because, you know, you have a totally different attorney general now. And we don't know where it will go. But if it's very clear, I think most would feel compelled to act on it. We'll see if he does.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.